the station of the nations, AM 1270, WHLD, Niagara Falls, Buffalo, New York, a Citadel Broadcasting Communications Station.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will you still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
It's a beautiful Monday, October 18th, 2004, and welcome to today's show. This is Dr. Rob Stahl with What Should You Expect at Your Age? What You Should Expect at Your Age is a Lot. And my listeners, especially the older adults and caregivers out there, shouldn't settle for less. Last week we talked about infections in older adults with Dr. Joseph Mylott, Chief of Infectious Disease at the Erie County Medical Center. Today's show is part one of several shows that will deal with senior living options. Sometimes your current home will be the place that you'll be happiest and healthiest. Sometimes, though, other types of living situations may be just the right thing to bring out the best in you. I have with me today Mr. Robert Meese, President and CEO of Beechwood Continuing Care, which includes the Beechwood Residence, the Beechwood Nursing Home, Bloker Homes, and Asbury Point. And I also have Mr. Michael Maloney, Executive Director of the Greenfield Senior Living Facilities in the Niagara Lutheran Health System. They're here to discuss how their organizations are trying to meet the varied needs of older adults who may need to find another living situation in order to stay happy, healthy, and safe. The phone number for your calls is 855-6848, and we're all here to answer your questions about senior living options. Welcome, gentlemen. I'm glad you can be here.
Good to be here.
Thanks.
Can you tell us a little bit about your professional backgrounds first and your current responsibilities in your organizations?
Oh, sure. I'd be happy to, Rob.
This is Mr. Meese of Beechwood.
I'm born and raised in Buffalo and a graduate of Canisius College. I'm a child of the 60s, and at that time, the Vietnam War was going hot and heavy, and I decided that I wanted to serve my country, so I enlisted in the Army Reserves, and that caused me to be a semester or two behind my friends that we had recently graduated from high school. And as such, then, when I finished my training and came back to school, my friends had already graduated, and my best friend was a social worker at a nursing home. His mom was a nursing supervisor. He was the social worker there. And he kept telling me what a terrific job it was and how much he enjoyed it and how much his mother enjoyed her job, and encouraged me, once I finished my schooling a year later, to talk to the people in charge of his facility, and that led one thing to another, and here I am today, now 27 years later.
Wow. That's a background I hadn't heard yet. Fascinating. And what are your current responsibilities in the Beechwood Continuing Care?
Well, I've been blessed to be the President and Chief Executive Officer of Beechwood Continuing Care since 1988. And as you mentioned in the introduction, we have four different facilities that are a part of our continuum, ranging from housing for independent living seniors to skilled nursing and short-term rehab for more frail people. And I'm responsible as the chief executive for all of those companies, as well as chief executive for the foundation that we have, the Beechwood Bloker Foundation, which raises money for the benefit of the homes within our continuum.
And you, Mike?
I, too, Buffalo native. I haven't fallen far from the Buffalo community. Grew up in the Bailey Kensington area of the city, and also, like Bob, grew up during the Vietnam era. I didn't realize, Bob, you were a graduate of Canisius College, Niagara University.
Oh.
We'll have to talk about some...
I won't
hold
that against you.
Some of the basketball days back then. And my background was actually in education, secondary education. And back when I graduated in the mid-70s, teaching positions were hard to come by. I taught for a couple of years, and during the summer months when those teachers have off, I worked for an employment agency, and a ticket, as they called it, came in for a social worker for an adult care facility in the city of Buffalo, the Bristol Home. I took that job, and the rest was history. I stayed with Bristol as its social worker and became the assistant administrator and the executive director for Bristol. I stayed there for 20 years. And have moved on to several other not-for-profit communities in the western New York area, and I now am with the Niagara Lutheran, specifically at the Greenfields community in Lancaster, where my responsibilities include the court and the manor, and those two are our housing options for the health system. The court is our assisted living entity, and the manor is our residential.
Just curious, what did you teach?
Social studies.
Social studies.
Yeah, a little bit of history there.
Well, maybe we'll see how that fit into the whole scheme of things. I did forget to mention that Beechwood also has, as part of the Beechwood residence, the Wesley Rehabilitation Unit, which is a subacute care unit. And we'll get into how all of these different facilities piece together in the whole scheme of things. Let's see. Where are your organizations right now? And why don't you tell us about the continuum that each of the organizations represent? And let's define the term continuum of care first. Not everybody might be familiar with that, so let's get that definition out of the way, and then we'll go on from there.
Okay. Well, Mike and I both are here representing our respective organizations. We're both nonprofit organizations, and we're both representing organizations that not only foster but encourage a full continuum of care, ranging from independent living on up to more intensive services. The continuum really is a progression of services, so that people can enter into the continuum or enter into our campus of facilities needing very little care or services, and in some cases no care or services, just interested in independent living. And as their needs change, they are automatically then encouraged or admitted into the higher levels of care, depending on what their needs are. It's a particularly valuable service in that oftentimes with couples, be they married or be they siblings that have been living together for years, they both don't age at the same rate and both have different needs. And to be able to offer services to people of varying needs and still be able to retain a close family relationship is something that clearly the consumer wants nowadays. So we're both very delighted to offer, you know, that kind of service.
Exactly. Niagara Lutheran, too, much like Beechwood, Rob, had looked at our original facility is in the city of Buffalo on Hager Street, and it was the first freestanding skilled nursing facility, I believe, in New York. It has been in existence there for over 50 years, but it is a freestanding nursing facility. And the dream of our board and our chief executive officer was to look at an environment that could address multiple needs at multiple entry points for future residents that could come to us. And the Greenfield campus became a reality about 5 years ago, where we do have all of the levels of service available to individuals. And much like Beechwood, as Bob has indicated, spouse, there are others that are looking at those services. We have many of our residents that will have a spouse that will be in one level of service, perhaps our assisted or residential, and another spouse that would be in the skilled nursing facility. And it becomes very convenient where you can just simply take a short walk and you can be there at whatever time of day you would choose. And the services are very familiar to an individual. Staff become very familiar to the individual. So it really is customer or service satisfaction kind of option that we think that the continuing care community does represent.
Now, the nursing home you talked about, Niagara Lutheran on Hager Street, what exactly is the name, and can you both describe what the geographic layout is of both of the continuums that you represent?
Well, for Niagara Lutheran, we have two campuses, one in the city of Buffalo. Our original is on Hager Street on the east side, not far from Canisius College. It offers 170 beds of nursing and rehab services, and that facility has been in existence for about 50 years. We're coming up to our 50th anniversary. It will look at primarily a geographic base and also a faith-based. We will attract many Lutherans, but of course we will accept individuals of any faith or individuals of any persuasion. It is there as a service organization. Geography really becomes a very key point. There are many of my employees and others that are from Lancaster, where the Greenfields is located, and there is no life west of Transit Road. It
now,
just ends.
So geography, both in terms of staff and also not necessarily where the residents are, but often family members, where family members live.
Absolutely. I'm sure as many of our communities will look at some of the determining factors, there are many that we'll discuss this afternoon, but a key is geography. Convenience to family and other individuals as to what is close for visitation, for making sure that they can be there and be present and supportive to the individual that is calling either Greenfield or Beechwood or others their new home.
And Bob, and at Beechwood, we're located on the corner of Millersport and North Forest, just kind of kitty corner from the University of Buffalo's Amherst campus. On that site of 30-some acres, we've got two nursing homes, the Beechwood Residence and the Beechwood Nursing Home. They're physically attached, and within those two nursing homes, we offer special Alzheimer's unit, as well as the subacute program or the short-term rehab program that we call the Wesley Rehabilitation Center. And then on the other side of the campus, more on Stahl Road and North Forest, is Asbury Point, which is our retirement community for independent seniors. And about 5 miles away in the heart of Williamsville is the Bloker Homes, which is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year, and the Beechwood Residence its 40th, and the Beechwood Nursing Home its 30th this year. The Bloker Homes, getting back to the Bloker Homes, they're on Evans Street, which runs between Main Street and Sheridan Drive. And it has a unique and fascinating history, but we're delighted for it to be a part of our family.
And though the name says Bloker Homes, it is one building. It might appear to be a bunch of separate little buildings, almost like a
right.
colony, if you will.
Yep.
But it's one building, and it's an adult care facility that houses people that are more independent than the people in the nursing home. And that goes along with the continuum definition. So let's take things from people that are living in the community and work our way through the continuum and talk about how people might come to live at the different facilities, and starting at what would be called the lowest level of care. And let's define lowest level of care versus high level of care, and also rehabilitation, short-term rehabilitation versus a maintenance type of rehabilitation.
Okay. Well, the first or the lowest level of care is what we offer at Beechwood. Is our Asbury Point community. It's an independent retirement community. We offer no health care services on that, which is done intentionally, not because we have any other ulterior motive, but we were convinced when we got the idea of creating Asbury Point that there are plenty of seniors out there that don't necessarily need intensive outpatient health care, but simply want an opportunity to socialize, that don't have to worry about the hassles of home maintenance or meal preparation, shopping. They're looking for friends that they can participate in social events, and we thought that this was a good fit, and that's really what we offer at Asbury Point, is independent living, and
hopefully people will live there for many, many years. But when the time comes that they begin to need more service, then the continuum becomes available, and some move on if that's their choice.
So let's take the next step where people might move from an independent living situation and go into a situation that has more healthcare services available right on site. Mike, do you want to address that?
The next would be the assisted living level, or what may be called the enriched living. These are usually two names that consumers will know or connect with. The assisted living is a step up from what Bob had indicated of the housing option, where there are some basic core services that may be available. The assisted living will offer the healthcare component in some variety. And it will again be, generally will be an apartment type of style of living, so that there is living and sleeping and some food preparation areas that would be available to our residents. The core services, housekeeping, maintenance, meal preparation, are also there for support. And then that is enhanced by usually staff that is available 24 hours a day. And when I say usually a healthcare component staff that is available, so that there would be a nurse or an aide that would be able to respond to an emergency situation. The health services team also can provide medication supervision, so the delivery of medication, ordering of medication, communication with primary care physicians and any other number of other specialists can be assisted. Then also the personal care staff will look at bathing, grooming, and dressing functions, so that the resident goal is to may remain as independent as possible. The staff is there to customize, individualize the care, so that there will be as much help as needed in order for that individual to remain within the enriched or the assisted living environment.
And generally people at that level are able to walk on their own, are able to function in basic daily needs.
That's right. Usually, certainly a wheelchair or a scooter or walker, those are all most appropriate and certainly are very evident within most assisted living or enriched environments. The individual that is unable to transfer or needs assistance with transferring begins to look at the next level, and that would be for the skilled nursing environment.
Now, what do people do about their physician care? How do they get to see a doctor?
Well, for many of the communities, there is a primary care physician that can be available for Greenfield. We have a primary care physician that is available for our residents, so that we have a physician and a nurse practitioner that are available on site, so that they may look at taking advantage of those services. They are very convenient. Physician, nurse practitioner is there on whatever the scheduled basis is, so it avoids some of the January in Buffalo of trying to get out in transportation and all of those. But many of our residents, and I'd say a good 50% of our residents, will continue with their primary care physician that they have had a long relationship with. So it can be a variety. Our goal is really to simplify life, to make it as easy as possible, so to provide those services so that resident may elect to take advantage of those that would be appropriate to his or her needs.
At the independent living level, the residents that live there are as independent as anyone else in the community, so clearly they would continue their personal relationship with their doctor. We find some of our residents voluntarily give up their driver's licenses, so we offer transportation services to take them to their doctor. But same with other practitioners, their dentists and podiatrists and other.
Okay, let's continue through the continuum, and we'll try and cover this in the next few minutes, and then get on to some other issues like financing. How do people pay for this? What does having a faith-based organization mean, and things like that? So let's continue through, and Bob,
okay,
you can continue on.
Well, the next level would be, well, you can really go in two different directions. One is short-term rehab or skilled nursing care. In terms of our presentation here today, short-term rehab is something that has been relatively new to the field of long-term care. Traditionally, this service has been offered through hospitals or through specialized facilities, but now There has been an explosion, if you will, of what are called subacute programs or services that are very similar to what you'd find in a hospital setting in the area of rehabilitation. Clearly, nursing homes don't have operating rooms and emergency departments, but we do have exceptionally skilled therapists and specially trained physicians and others who can work with people, oftentimes from the community, but in some cases, when you have a continuum such as what Mike and I offer, residents from within our own facilities that have fallen, perhaps broken a hip, or have had a stroke, or have had other problems, they go into the hospital for addressing the immediate cause for that problem, be it setting of the hip, or the surgery, or the immediate stroke service or care. But then when the follow-up is required, there's no sense sitting in a semi-private room, miles away from your family, living very much in an institution when you can live in a short-term rehab program such as what Greenfield offers or we offer at our Wesley Rehab Center. You get the same level of quality in terms of and comprehensiveness of care and services. It's just not in the traditional hospital setting.
It's in a more home-like setting, yeah. And you're not susceptible to the problems that staying in a hospital can cause, like infections that are located in hospitals that tend to run through hospitals and not elsewhere. So you try to get patients out of the hospital as soon as possible. In a way, a hospital is not a place for a sick person to be, right. So you try and get them stable so that they can get out and get into rehab before they further decline in terms of deconditioning and get into an active rehab program that's conducive. An environment is very important to how someone feels about getting better and working hard to get to their highest level of function.
That's right. Excuse me, Mike, I was just going to mention that the average length of a person's stay into a short-term unit is anywhere from 14 to maybe 21 or 24 days. When we say short-term, we really do mean short-term. It's very intensive, and it's a lot of work for the patient because we all want people to be home and living in their own environment as quickly as they can.
And the goal is to get people home.
Exactly.
Indeed, that is the goal, is to get an individual back to their own home, their own environment where they are very comfortable. At Greenfield, we have over 700 individuals that come and go on an annual basis. The rehab has become very, very busy, and in fact, we have supplemented that now not only with the inpatient rehab, but also outpatient rehab, where we're looking now at an expansion of our existing building to accommodate what we started about a year ago of the outpatient part of, you know, many of our residents become very familiar with the therapist. They develop a relationship. It is a very good relationship. And as that ended for their in-house time, they would go back to their home, but they still need a little tune-up. They need to continue with their regimen. They need to continue with the therapy routine. And now we have been able to supplement that with an outpatient program that is also continuing it, not only while they're here with us at the Greenfield, but then also as they return to their home as an outpatient.
Now, is that care where they come back to the facility, or do therapists go out to their home, actually?
No, we don't go to the individual's home. They rather come back to Greenfield, actually, our campus in Lancaster. And again, some of that is the equipment is there, the therapists are there, and also we have an excellent aquatic therapy program, which many of the residents will take advantage of.
And sometimes, though, there are people that it's hard for them to get back to the facilities, and it is arranged that they get continued therapy at home. So that's even extending the continuum back into the person's home. And it's done in a way that safety is a number one priority when people are moving from location to location. Where is someone going to be the safest without a significant chance of having a fall, a complication? And where are they going to be happiest? Is their caregiver, the person who might be at home with them, are they able to meet the day-to-day needs?
And those are factors that go into determining, are people able to go back home?
Mm-hmm.
And some people, after they have rehab, it's found they're not able to go home. And they might have to go into more of a long-term care setting.
Well, the other two is the continuum of care. We'll look at not only the skilled nursing environment, if that would be the most appropriate, but as with Beechwood and at Greenfields, we are able to offer the residential housing and also the assisted living environments. So as whatever is the most appropriate and most supportive, and, again, the customer choice, as consumers come to us, as we look at with rehab, it is from day number one, we begin to look at the discharge of that individual back to their own home as the optimal. But if that is not possible, then certainly the other options then come into play where we can look at the other services that are available either with us or elsewhere in the community.
Bob, did you want to comment on that? And it is true that subacute care, the rehab, the acute rehab program is somewhat of a fulcrum point where people generally come from the hospital, go into the rehab program, and they don't stay there longer than 2 to 4 weeks, and they're either going home, they might be going to a skilled nursing facility environment, or they might be going back or going to an assisted living, or back to their own home, or independent living, such as what you talked about with Asbury Point and what Greenfield also offers.
Right. As Mike was talking, I was thinking that the average age of the people that are coming through our short-term rehab unit, our Wesley Rehab Center, is getting younger and younger. I suspect you're probably seeing that as well. We're seeing 45-year-old automobile accident victims and 55-year-old worker compensation cases and those sorts of things that I think that the general public perceives that what nursing homes offer or our campuses offer is exclusively for the very old, but instead it's the whole profession of long-term care is evolving into a much more dynamic level of service than we've ever seen in the past.
So you might actually have parents coming into the rehab setting and then their kids, the baby boomer level kids, also coming into the rehab setting. So it's almost family medicine in a sense. I just want to get clear, and I learned in my training that only 5% of the population 65 and over was in a nursing home setting. And that was made clear to me to give the perspective that when you talk about an older person, you're not talking about people that are in nursing homes. And so that statistic, 5% in a nursing home institutional setting, 95% in the community. Can you break that down further in terms of the entire population, 65 and over, how many are at home? How many might be in an independent living facility? How many in an adult home, an assisted living facility, and nursing home? Do you have those statistics roughly? I know it changes. This is often a moving target, and with the advent of assisted living, there's been a shift of sorts from a long-term care setting into assisted living.
The specifics of it, I don't know, but as we look at the fastest growing age cohort is those over the age of 80, and as we look at that old, if you would, those individuals that are in that upper age group, it is that the needs and the environments become different. And as you look at that statistic, which is, I believe, correct, of a very small percent, the demographics as they change, the population and the ratios, I believe, then also changes in individual ages naturally, as we would expect that it would over and above that 5%. But the specifics of it, I'm not familiar with.
Well, let's take a short break, and we'll come back to discussing more issues related to how much the care costs, how people do pay for it, who can get into that kind of service, and other interesting topics. So we'll break down and be right back.
Hours and hours. sent to you. Play your love songs all night long.
Okay, we're back now, and during the break we were talking about some important things that we should cover, and one thing I've experienced as a physician who limits his practice to geriatric care is I've had several patients who I feel have waited too long to make a change in their living environment. They're insistent upon staying in their apartment, living alone, for various reasons, that they have things that are there that might be difficult to move to a new living situation, that they just don't feel that they would want to be in a situation with other people. I guess inertia is a big factor, just general inertia, that it's hard to make that decision and to move out of a place you may have been for 10, 20, 50 years even. And what I found is generally what happens is the people end up being forced to make a decision. They have a decline in their health where they end up in the hospital. And then from the hospital, it's determined that it isn't safe for them to go back home. They may have had a fall at home that resulted in a hip fracture. And then it's no longer their choice, really, where they can go. And what can you say about that?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. It breaks my heart sometimes to listen to some of the people that I see during the course of my typical day who have that same attitude. And there's a lot of reasons behind it. But I think, you know, Mike talked a lot about choice earlier, people having the ability to choose. And if you wait too long and you face some kind of awful event in your life, be it a stroke or something like that, you may not be in a position to make much in the way of a choice. And why put yourself through that? And think of your family as well. They're the ones that want to be there for you. They want to support you and care for you. And you may be making it harder on them as well. So I would encourage people to learn as much as you can about what services are out there. Maybe take a ride around and take some tours of various places. Read up as much as you can. There's nothing like seeing firsthand what could ultimately be your future home.
I would just echo that. As Bob has indicated, it is a smart planner. An individual that is not in a crisis mode when there is a decision that has to be made, as you may be in a hospital bed or as there is some other health emergency that may warrant some quick action, and your choices then may be reduced for whatever number of different reasons. As you look, and these are at times very difficult decisions, we look at them, I think that choices have come a long way in the past 10, 15 years as to what options are available for folks. but it is looking at making the choice and making some of the decisions that will take you out of the crisis mode into a planning mode of saying that this is the best option for me. It is a simplifying of life. It is looking at refocusing some time and energy, becoming part of a system that is a Beechwood system, Niagara Lutheran system, others, where you are in the family, if you would, so that some of those decisions are already addressed. You've done the research rather than having to react to it in a crisis mechanism.
Let me remind everyone, the phone number here to call in and ask any questions is 855-6848. And what would be a central number that people could call at your organizations?
Well, at Beechwood, our general number is 504-1000.
And for the Greenfield, it would be 684-8400.
Now, when people call this number, what should they say?
Well, it would all depend on what they're interested in. They could go to our website if they just want some general information without having to talk to anyone, if that's what you're interested in. Our website is www.beechwoodcare.org.
And that's Beechwood, B-E-E-C-H-W-O-O-D, just like the tree.
That's right.
And there are some beautiful beech trees on the campus. That's where it got its name.
That's right. Or when you call, you can just simply ask for some general information, and we'd be happy to either send it to you or make an appointment to have you come out and talk with anyone you'd like, more than likely our admissions coordinators. Or a tour, if you're interested.
And the receptionists at both your organizations are trained to take calls like this, that you don't have to have a whole story ready. You can basically describe your situation, and the people that answer the phone know how to point you in the right direction.
And our staff understands that it is a major decision, and it is looking at the staff that is trained to be sensitive to some of those needs, to begin to ask some of the questions. If it's not the receptionist or that general reception or incoming call kind of staff individual, it then goes to some of our admission or screening individuals that will be able to ask the questions that are appropriate to look at what the individual needs are and then to point the individual in the right direction. Very often, you're exactly right, an individual will call and well, I'm interested in the nursing facility. Well, as you begin to ask some of the appropriate questions, the individual really is not in need of skilled nursing care. It would be much more appropriate for us to be looking at either of our housing options, either the residential or the assisted levels.
Now, where else can people get general information about housing and care options, living options?
Well, there's always the Erie County Senior Services. I suspect they have a website, but to be perfectly frank, I'm not sure I've
they do. They have an excellent website and a phone number, which I don't recall offhand, but there is a central intake phone number, and you can see that at the radio show's website. I had Pam Krawczyk, the director of Erie County Senior Services, on a couple of months ago. And so you can look at the show's website, whatshouldyouexpect.com. And pick up that number or call the station. We'd be happy to give that to you here, or you can call my office number, 636-7531. Also, if you need me to point you in the right direction, I'd be happy to do that.
Another resource in the community, Rob, is coordinated care. Coordinated care is another community link for individuals that are looking at transitions, looking at options. And their resource, and they certainly have staff individuals that can help and point you in the right direction.
There's also a statewide and nationwide organization that encompasses the not-for-profit facilities, of which Beechwood and Niagara Lutheran are part. Maybe you can say a little bit about those organizations.
Well, the statewide organization that both Mike's organization and ours are members of is the New York Association of Homes and Services for the Aging,
NYAHSA.org, I think is their website.
That's right, and they have a consumer's guide that they would be happy to send to you. Well, what's nice about the consumer's guide
is it not only describes the various levels of care that you can find in the continuum, but they also provide definitions and some other valuable information that is helpful when you're just beginning your search.
And that organization is better known as, or easier known as, NIASA.
Right. Right.
Okay. And Mike, what was Greenfield's website to start off? And do you have any other comments on the national or the state organization?
Our website is www.niagaralutheran.org. And you can access both our city campus and the Greenfield from that location. And the other is we both, as not-for-profits, look at not only our state organization, but the national organization, the American Association of Homes and Services for the Aging. And I would just reinforce what Bob had, that resource of the Consumer Guide is really an excellent tool. It offers some definition where you are able to look, read, and gain in a very simplified format. And that is actually available from our local organization that is an affiliate of both of the state and the national, and that's the Western New York Association of Home.
And that's WNYASA.
That's right. And that, too, through the website is available. Or if you call Beechwood or Greenfield, we have those consumer guides that are available. We'd be happy to send them out to you.
Yeah, and I'll put a link on the radio show's website so that you can easily access that as well. Now, while we're talking about not-for-profit, what does not-for-profit mean exactly, and how does it differ from for-profit organizations?
Well, I'll take a stab at that one. I guess as our chief financial officer keeps reminding us, that the not-for-profit does not mean we lose money. It is that we are mission-driven. We have a faith-based organization that has a voluntary board of directors, volunteers that will be drawn from the general community that give us a sense of direction, a purpose of rooting as to what we have as a mission, and that is first and foremost to serve our general community and specifically the residents that are either at our Hager Street or Greenfield's campuses, to look at those services being for the foremost. And as we look to the for not-for-profit status, it is that that certainly we look at the end of the day not to be making a profit for our owner or for that board of directors. All of the profits that are generated or realized, perhaps better called surplus, if there ever is such a thing at the end of the day, goes back into the programs that are available for our residents.
So there's no stockholders, if you will, and you don't get into stock-type issues or CEOs that are making several million dollars a year, certainly.
Well, we could vouch for that.
You mentioned faith-based, and Bob Beechwood also is faith-based, but not-for-profits need not be faith-based.
Right, right. Yeah, we happen to be, our roots are with the United Methodist Church, but the church does not own us or control us. We're a freestanding nonprofit organization. And I like to think of our organization and all the other nonprofits as really being owned by the community. Our board members are representatives of the community. They are not paid in any way. They're simply there because they believe in our mission and they believe in the services that we provide. And to me, that speaks volumes to the commitment that the staff ultimately have with our residents, that there's no other motivation behind what we're doing other than to serve people and to serve them well.
Now, let's get back to the issue of people being reluctant to come in to move from where they're living currently and go to an organization like Beechwood or Niagara Lutheran. One of the issues is money. They have their nest egg, and they're afraid that it will be gone. How does that work? And what's your feeling on that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It wasn't until we established Asbury Point back in 2000 that I really thought this through. But we ran across so many people that felt they were independent living in their home when in reality they were reliant on someone to plow their driveway, to cut their grass, to do maintenance around the house, in some cases to drive them places, et cetera, et cetera. And when getting back to your question about money, when you think about it, you're spending an awful lot of money on those kinds of services. And if you're thinking about or feeling the need to live somewhere else, you should also look at it not only on kind of the personal emotional level about moving out of the place you've lived with for so long, but also look at it from the checkbook perspective and how much you're now spending versus how much you would need to spend somewhere else.
And there's also a lot of time being spent by people living in their own apartments or homes, just maintaining all of that, all the bookkeeping that goes along with arranging all of those services, and also family members. You talked about families that have a burden, if you will, in watching over people, worrying about people, making sure that financially they're doing the things they need to do. So we come back to which is more expensive, less expensive, and what's better for you in the long run.
I guess the question is, what's better for you in the long run is a matter of the individual. It is looking at what you look at as you do the assessment is what your needs are and what the advantages and disadvantages are, as only the individual can really look at making that determination. As we look at the costs, as Bob has indicated, very often it can be that there is a sticker shock that's involved. Well, oh my gosh, I can't afford that on a monthly basis. But as you then take a step back and begin to look at putting the cost down on a piece of paper, it becomes very much affordable for many of the services that we're talking about in our assisted living or our residential. So it is sometimes a matter of just reviewing what your financial situation is, what your costs are in your own home as you look at adding up all of those various services. The other part of that is that it becomes a much simpler lifestyle. So as you have the multitude of the sources that are out there of coming in and providing those services, it now is focused as to it is one provider, if you would, essentially, for all of those services.
Now, what about different insurances? Medicare, Medicaid, and also long-term care insurance. I've heard that long-term care insurance is going to be relied on by long-term facility-based organizations as one of the major payment sources in the future.
Well, right now in nursing homes, skilled nursing facilities, Medicaid is the primary payer. More people, their care is paid for by Medicaid. And Medicaid is, very simply, the payer of last resort. In other words, they will insist that the person spend all of their, almost all of their personal assets. Of course, there are limits and checks and balances if there's a spouse in the community and that sort of thing. But generally speaking, you have to, what's called, spend down your assets to pay for care first before the Medicaid program will take over. So long-term care insurance is really seen as kind of the salvation for taxpayers, because the Medicaid program is, as you've been following the county executive's advertisements on TV and the press releases and things he's been offering, is an exceptionally costly program. And most of the Medicaid monies that are spent in this state are spent on nursing home care. So if people can have incentives to purchase long-term care insurance, then when the time comes that they need it, the insurance will pay for their care and not Medicaid, and as taxpayers, that will all be to our advantage.
And it would hopefully relieve some of the tax burden that's going towards paying for long-term care.
Some people buy it, but quite frankly, not enough at this point.
And Medicare generally pays for the more acute things, like the acute rehab and hospital stays.
That's right, yes. So Medicare is I'm afraid the perception of many people is that if they need nursing home care at some point in their life, that government will somehow pay for it, and that's just not the way it is. Medicare will pay, as you've described, for very short-term kind of intensive medical services for a limited amount of time. And unless you're at the point where you no longer have any money left, when Medicaid pays over, in between, is when you need to use your own resources or come up with insurances or other forms of payment.
Mike, do you have anything to add to that?
I'll just for the assisted living environment, there's a very limited availability for any kind of supplemental funds. And indeed, the program for the assisted living is the SSI program, Supplemental Security Income. It is not a Medicaid program as we would find for the nursing facilities. Rather, this is a more housing entity or a subsidy that is available. But unfortunately, that program is at such a limited reimbursement rate, there are very, very few facilities that are actually accepting an SSI population or a resident at this point. One of our sister facilities, the Lutheran Church Home in Buffalo, is one of the very few that is still looking at accepting SSI as an incoming for an incoming resident.
Now, in the few minutes we have left, and I wish we had another hour because there's lots to go over, what can you tell us about the problems, challenges, and new things on the horizon for both of your organizations?
I think the biggest challenge, quite frankly, is what I was just speaking about, and that's the Medicaid program. Unfortunately, money drives the system, and state, county, and federal governments are all under enormous pressure to reduce expenses, but yet, as the demographics change and more people are getting older, baby boomers are beginning to hit retirement age, there's enormous pressure to increase services for the seniors, and they've become so expensive due to drug costs and labor costs and fringe benefit costs and et cetera that I am deeply concerned about what will happen in the future. I'm afraid that unless there is adequate reimbursement for nursing homes to be able to meet this growing need, that we may end up with fewer facilities and more people needing services. It's not a bright horizon in that respect. And I think there are some innovative programs that are being looked at that will try to encourage people to access lower levels of care, such as assisted living and various housing options, rather than making the leap into more expensive levels of care like nursing homes. And certainly no one wants to be in an institution any longer than they have to. So I applaud those people that are pursuing that, both on the legislative and on the consumer end.
And it's somewhat of a catch-22 that money is getting harder and harder to come by, yet the demands for high quality of care through regulations, state and federal regulations, continue to be there and increase as money is allocated towards this resource. People, I don't know what drives it exactly, but regulation comes along with federal and state monies that is spent on a particular program. But as you get more regulation, it becomes more expensive to provide the care. And you get into that catch-22, and with the and regulation adds an additional pressure on people, and do the lower paying jobs, the aides in a nursing home, would they want that pressure along with the low wage in a job that they might get a lot of fulfillment out of? It may not be a clean or an easy job. It certainly isn't an easy job, where they can go for the same amount of money almost and go to McDonald's or place in a Walmart and get paid similar amounts and don't have the pressure of a person's life in their hands.
I would go back to the planning aspect, and I think as we look at some of these issues, which are certainly public policy issues, I think Bob is correct. The challenge is looking at the balancing act of, you know, of paying for the services, looking at how we as a society will look at meeting these needs and a growing number of needs as we look at that fastest growing age cohort of those over 80 and those that are going to be in need. There is a social responsibility I think that it is imperative that we look at. individually and collectively as we look at long-term care insurance and other accountability programs that will look at how do we plan for our own aging. How do we look at preparing for our own aging? Certainly, we look at so many other aspects in our own life, how to buy the first house, how to prepare for college education for our children, all of those things. How do we look at retirement? How do we look at our long-term care needs? And I think long-term care insurance is certainly a bright light on the horizon. We have seen some growth with it, but not enough. And I think that there will be a need for us to look at how we can encourage, how we can incentivize, how we can look at all of the putting the right pieces together in order to make that happen.
And there'll be a great difference between the 80-year-olds today and the 80-year-olds that grew up in the 60s.
You're absolutely, you know, you played Crosby, Stills, and Nash on your break, and those guys are in their 60s now.
That'll be the music, not big band and Frank Sinatra,
right,
and things like that.
In terms of a challenge, and this is one that I'm invigorated by as opposed to discouraged by, and that is the consumer of the future, actually the consumer of today, but more so the consumer of the future, will be demanding an entirely different nursing home or assisted living facility than what we now offer. What we now offer is basically the hospital model with a nurse's station and, you know, that sort of thing. And I think the boomers will look for a more residential feel, less of a medical institutional model. And it's challenging, I think, the innovation of much that we're seeing now across the country. It's exciting. I can't wait.
A Woodstock feel, perhaps, right?
Yes.
There is a movement called Quality First, and it's to be greatly admired that the not-for-profits and really all nursing home long-term care organizations are taking up the challenge of decreasing resources and increasing requirements and care needs. Why don't you say a few words about Quality First, and then we'll start wrapping up.
Well, Quality First is, as you indicated, a national initiative. It is looking at many not-for-profit providers and, I believe, even some proprietary providers,
right,
that are looking at participating in the program. And it sets a standard. It is looking at how we, as providers, do the job that we say we're doing. And as you know, the marketing brochures can talk about, you know, all of the rosy things and, you know, all of this is very positive. But this is actually saying, prove it. Prove it. What kind of job are you actually doing? What kind of satisfaction is actually coming from our residents? How do we involve the community? How do we look at establishing standards of quality from our finances to how we communicate with the general population? It's beginning to look at establishing some national benchmarks that we can all participate in. Both Greenfield and Niagara Lutheran and Beechwood are participants locally in this initiative.
And even nursing homes, they're no longer the buildings with the long hallways. Their physical structure is also developing into communities.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There are two new facilities that have been built in western New York, the Pines in Machias, which is the Cattaraugus County home, and Our Lady of Peace up in Lewiston on the grounds of St. Mary's Hospital, have replicated an exciting design that you are beginning to see across the country. They're households in which residents live in small clusters, and they make joint decisions as to how they would like to spend their day and what activities and what services and what eating arrangements they want to have, those sorts of things. It's really more like home than an institution, so it's quite exciting.
I think things are moving just in the right direction, and unfortunately, that's all the time we have today. Thanks so much, Bob. Mr. Robert Meese of Beechwood Continuing Care, Mr. Michael Maloney of the Greenfields, Niagara Lutheran Healthcare, And congratulations on your accomplishments and best of luck in the future. And
thank you.
I think your organizations are where they need to be and moving in the right direction. Thanks also, as Bob mentioned, to Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young for their classic song, Our House, that was played at the break. Next Monday, I'll be here to take your calls and talk about safety for seniors. My guest will be Patty Ann Gazinski of the Erie County Department of Emergency Services, and Kitty Sullivan of Lifeline Systems. This is Dr. Rob Stahl. See you next week.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will you still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? Have gone. You can knit a sweater by the fireside. Sunday mornings go for a ride. Doing the garden, digging the weeds. Who could ask for more? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? Every summer we can rent a cottage in the Isle of Wight if it's not too dear. We shall scrimp and save. Grandchildren on your knee. Vera, Chuck and Dave. Send me a postcard, drop me a line, stating point of view. Indicate precisely what you mean to say. You're sincerely wasting away. Give me your answer, fill in a form, mine forevermore. Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm